Hey everybody, welcome to the On the Rocks podcast. This is Denver Post sports writer Kyle Newman alongside fellow beat reporter Patrick Saunders, and we got a great show lined up for you here today. A little post Hall of Fame vote analysis. Of course, Mariano Rivera becoming the first unanimous selection to the Hall of Fame, and Roy Halladay, Edgar Martinez, and Mike Mussina will join him. We'll talk a little bit about that, plus offer some final thoughts on Bonds, Clemens, and Helton and Walker. Looking forward to next year, the prospects for all of those guys. So, Patrick, to start off, Mo, unanimous. I was pretty pumped about it. I wasn't sure if it was going to happen. I was seeing some rumblings that, you know, guys weren't going to vote for him because the save doesn't mean anything. Anybody can do it. Yada, yada. I think it's well-deserved. I think some other players should have gotten in too, unanimous. I think it's well-deserved. Any thoughts?
No, I agree. I mean, who had the highest vote total prior, I think, was Ken Griffey Jr.
Ken Griffey Jr., 99.3. Tom Seaver, 98.8. Nolan Ryan, 98.8. Ripken Jr., 98.5. Cobb, 98.2. George Brett, 98.2. There you go.
So the idea that one or two voters out there in the past, for whatever reason, sometimes to shine the spotlight on themselves, wouldn't vote for a guy. But I think it was cool to see that Mariano, who by all accounts is one of the classiest guys certainly the Yankees have ever produced, for him to get in unanimously was really cool. Obviously, he knew he was in, but I saw the video of his reaction when he got in unanimous, and there was a lot of joy in that. I thought that was really cool. You know, I remember when Mariano was coming through Colorado, his last time through Colorado, he made time to meet with regular fans and people coming through Colorado as a Yankees player. And I thought, man, that is class. There's very few professional athletes and certainly very few Yankees players who would take the time to do something like that. So that, I'm just really thrilled for him. You know, the other votes, I think I would have, I don't have a vote yet for a couple of reasons, but I thought the other three guys who got in were all deserving. I did think Mussina, a little bit of a bubble guy. I don't think he's a no-brainer Hall of Famer, if you will. I think his longevity and the fact, let's face it, that he pitched for two teams on the East Coast boosted him immeasurably. You know, you can't get around the fact that you get more pub, you get more attention, and for lack of a better term, you get more legitimacy in the Hall of Fame vote and everything else if you're part of the baseball center of the universe. And in his case, it was the Yankees and the Orioles. You know, it's tougher when you're out on the West Coast, and really tough when you're in the middle of the country like the Rockies, the Royals, the Brewers, etc. But bottom line, I think it was a good class.
Yeah, Rivera, career saves leader, helped the Yankees win five World Series titles. He also blew a Game 7 World Series save. So pretty remarkable, you know, to that he could have bounced back from that. And obviously his success story just coming into the major leagues is another thing altogether.
141 postseason innings in his career. I mean, that's as much as two full seasons for most relievers in their career, and he did that just in the postseason alone. Pretty remarkable. I'm curious, what's your take on Larry Walker? The voter tracking had him as high as 66%. I think he came in, if I'm not mistaken, 54.6, I believe, was the vote total. And Larry, you know, he talked to us the other day after the vote came out. He sounded pleased at his rise in voting, but he sounded a little bit skeptical that he'll make it in next year. What do you think?
You know, I agree with him. It's going to take another big leap for sure. I'll also say I am a little disappointed. You know, Bonds, Clemens is a whole other thing, but I'm a little disappointed to see, you know, we can see the tracker all the way up until the announcement, and then obviously the hall allows for anonymous ballots.
Right.
I think, you know, all the ballots should be out there. I like the transparency. And so it's disappointing to see Walker go from, you know, 60-something to in the 50s where he ended up. Like, hey, why that dip? You know, who is not voting for him here? But it is encouraging. And the fact that, you know, going into this final year here, he has even an outside shot at getting into the Hall as the first Rocky to do so, whereas, you know, halfway through his candidacy, it looked like his prospects were dead, is, I think, a tremendous credit to, you know, a lot of the people pushing for him, the Rockies organization at the forefront there. And then also, like we've touched on the podcast before, just kind of the evolving thought process around Walker, and obviously Coors Field and injuries really, you know, being the two things that the naysayers cite. But he was really a true five-tool player. You said it. Ringlesby said it. You know, everyone who saw him play a ton in his prime have said it. I think he's got a great chance next year of making that jump. It's going to take some more magic, though.
A couple things. One, the only surefire Hall of Famer, if I'm not mistaken, in next year's class is Derek Jeter. And he may again be a unanimous guy like his teammate, Mariano Rivera. I believe Jason Stark on MLB Network had this statistic, and I hope I get this right. Larry Walker had 88 more votes this year than he did a year ago. But to make it next year, he's going to need an additional 87 votes. That's assuming, of course, that the entire contingent of voters stays the same. Boy, that's going to be tough, going from 88 vote gain this year to another 87 next year. And I'm curious, what's your opinion? What do you think voters who are against Walker hold most against him? Do you think it's the Coors Field factor, or do you think it's the injury factor, the fact that, you know, he was hurt a lot, he didn't play a lot of games comparatively through his career to other Hall of Famers? What do you think is held most against him?
Yeah, I definitely think the Coors Field factor for sure, but also the durability thing, you know, staying on the field. I've seen that cited by several writers and their written decisions, you know, citing the amount of games he played, or rather didn't play in his case, comparative to a lot of his peers that are getting in the Hall or getting looks at the Hall. So I think that's held against him. But like I said, those walls are crumbling. Will they crumble quickly enough? And those Coors Field walls, the Coors Field bias walls I'm talking about, will they crumble quickly enough for Walker to get in next year? I think it looks really good for Helton. You know, even though he got 16.5%, a little lower than Walker did in his first year, he's got nine more seasons. The voting electorate is getting younger and younger and more forgiving of Coors and PEDs, I think we're seeing. Whether if it's too late for Bonds and Clemens, we'll talk about that here in a second. But it's looking promising, I think, for Helton.
You know, I may take a contrary view here. I'm wondering if Walker's vote next year in his 10th year is something of a litmus test for Todd Helton. The idea being, okay, people can look and say, you know what? Larry Walker didn't get in over 10 years, and we considered him, I'm not saying I do, but there is a contingent out there that says, I think Larry Walker was a better all-around player than Todd Helton was. Well, geez, you know, if Larry Walker didn't make it in 10 years, will Todd Helton make it? I'm not saying that's going to be the case, but I'm wondering if that argument's going to be out there. And they're going to say, you know what, wouldn't let Walker in. I don't see how I can let Helton in. I don't know if that's going to be held against him, but... And I don't know if Walker is the Coors Field litmus test or not, but I'll be curious to see. I do think that if Larry gets in next year, I think the door gets wide open for Todd Helton.
Hey, Harold Baines is in. You know, it should be wide open for Larry Walker
at
this point. But that's a whole other can of worms. But
or a kettle of fish.
Or a kettle of fish, as Mr. Saunders likes
to
say.
I have no idea what that means.
All the cool kids say it, you know? But to your point on Helton, Mr. Saunders, I do agree, you know, somewhat with the litmus test, because Walker acknowledged it himself on the conference call after the results came out, saying, hey, if they hold the Coors Field thing against me, I mean, Helton played all 17 years in Lodo, you know. So if they can't shake it with Walker, it's going to be harder to shake it with Helton or rationalize it, you know, for the voters who hold the altitude against these hitters.
No, I agree. I mean, best of luck. I mean, I'm biased because I covered Todd for much of his career, and you know, I love to watch him play, and I hope he gets in. But you know, I hope he gets in, but I like the fact that the Hall of Fame is a tough club to join. I think it makes it a little bit different than some of the other Hall of Fames. And I like that. It should be a stringent test to be able to get into Cooperstown.
Again, folks, Kyle Newman and Patrick Saunders on the On the Rocks podcast here, discussing the Hall of Fame voting that just got announced, and they'll be inducted, those four, in July in Cooperstown. Final subject here on the podcast before we let you go, Bonds and Clemens. And you and I almost came to fisticuffs the other day on the podcast over their candidacy. Should or should they not get in? Well, now let's talk about, will they get in? Clemens 59.5, Bonds 59.1. Both those marks lower, of course, as I mentioned, than, you know, the ballots that we knew about. But really, it's, you know, I thought they were going to potentially have a chance this year and looking good for next year, but they're just, they're really stalling out here. It's not looking too good for them with 3 years left on the ballot.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you, Kyle. They were tracking 70%-ish. And it seemed to me that I didn't think they'd get in this year, but I thought it certainly was trending toward them getting in next year, or possibly the year after. But then when the total vote tally actually came out and they did stall out a little bit, boy, I don't know. They may not make it. And you and I, we've had our huge discussions about this. But getting back to your point a little earlier about you wish all Hall of Fame ballots were made public, I agree. And in this instance, I think it's really important for fans out there to know, and the players to know, those of us who are deciding the Hall of Fame fate of guys like Bonds and Clemens, I think it's important for the public to know, you know, just who's voting for them and who's not. I just think that's more transparency in this process, the better, is my view. But bottom line, I think it's 50-50 now as to whether they make it in or not.
Jeff Bisson has a great column up at ESPN about their candidacies and how they're looking bleak right now. And from that story, a nice little tidbit here. To make up the difference in what they would need to attain that 75% mark, Clemens would need support from more than 38% of the guys who didn't vote for him, or gals, and Bonds 39%. And that's a pretty big chunk of voters to convince.
To change their minds.
Yeah, when you're talking on this issue, especially when a lot of these voters are very entrenched and they're saying, these guys are cheaters, we're not going to vote for them.
But I will say this, there are a number of very, very high-profile national guys, writers, who have changed their mind. Ken Rosenthal's one, Jason Stark is another. Guys who originally said no, reevaluated their stance and changed their mind to yes for a variety of reasons. Some people have stood fast and said, no, I'm never going to vote for these guys, Tom Verducci being one. But I wasn't aware of those numbers, but that's a large chunk of voters to have to get them to change their mind over the next 3 years. You know, we'll see. It's going to remain controversial. And if they did get in, imagine the tension, if you will, or the weird atmosphere, seeing either Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens up on the podium in Cooperstown the day of the Hall of Fame induction, when you know the powers that be at the Hall of Fame don't want them there, and you know there are a number of Hall of Famers, people already enshrined in the Hall, who don't want them there. It would be very, very interesting to hear the speeches, to see the reaction. Would people let bygones be bygones? Would people be outspoken? It would be one of the most interesting Hall of Fame weekends in the history of the Hall of Fame. So we'll see if it ever happens. But, boy, I tell you what, I'd like to attend that ceremony.
Bonds, Clemens, 3 more years. We will see what happens. The clock is ticking on perhaps the all-time greatest position player and one of the all-time greatest pitchers to ever play the game. Again, that was Patrick Saunders spitting his wise wisdom, and this is Kyle Newman here on the On the Rocks podcast. That'll just about do it for today's show. Be sure to head to dimmerpost.com/Rockies for expansive coverage of the club heading into spring training here in a couple weeks. And until next show, folks, take it easy.